It's time for the Rink Rats with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger of The Athletic, or is it? Is it of The Athletic, with The Athletic? How do you do that? I don't pay enough attention
Jesse
to
Granger
you.
Jesse Granger with The Athletic.
With The Athletic?
That's how
not
I say it.
The Athletic?
I don't know. I just say with. When we're forced to introduce ourselves before every question of the presser, that's what I've always said. I don't know. I don't know where I got
you
that.
You never wanted it to be of The Athletic?
Jesse Granger with The Athletic. Yeah, I say with. I think I said with the Las Vegas Sun prior to that, too.
Are you allowed to say
actually,
the
no.
Las Vegas Sun?
No, actually, I used to say Jesse Granger, Las Vegas Sun. I didn't say anything in between it. And then when I went to The Athletic, I changed it to with. I don't know why. These are the inner workings of my mind. Even I don't understand it.
All right. Well, that's fine. Mark Stone. Holy shit.
He beat the hell out of a man last night.
So, we've got a lot to talk about. I don't know exactly what's happened since our last podcast. I don't know what day it is most of the time. I know that this is an off day. It is not a game day. So, therefore, it's just that. It's not a game day. The Golden Knights have lost to Arizona. They have beaten Calgary and LA, and they lost to Nashville. I think that is what has transpired between our last podcast and this podcast.
Yeah, I think
and
you're
while
right.
I want to revisit the Arizona game, perhaps Mark Stone demolished Roman Josi. And it was an interesting fight in terms of when it happened in the game and why it happened. Because so Mark Stone gets a high stick in on Roman Josi. Roman Josi comes back, cross-checks Mark Stone. They're in front of the Nashville goal. A couple cross checks later, gloves are off. Roman Josi is trying to slip his hand out to deliver a punch. Mark Stone connects with the visor. Roman Josi crumples to the floor like a broken man.
Yeah, and Gallant said the same thing after the game. You don't want Mark Stone fighting.
It's not ideal.
Like I think there's not a player on the team I would like fighting less than Mark Stone.
So $9.5 million a year precludes you from actually being able to drop the gloves.
Yeah, and then Gallant's like, well, at the same time, I don't want to tell any player not to fight. Because he was asked about it by Ottawa media today after practice.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm not going to tell anyone to not drop the gloves because that's all he did throughout his career, Gerard Gallant. But we probably don't want Mark Stone fighting a whole lot because imagine if that visor breaks his finger.
Well, yeah.
And he's out 2 months.
That would be
I don't know how long a
less
finger
than
keeps
ideal.
You out.
Well, I feel like that's something he could play through, but he's not going to be as effective.
You'd
like
rather
his shot.
Him not playing with
well,
broken fingers.
Sure, exactly. I mean, Mark Stone with 9 fingers is probably still better than like 90% of the NHL. But still, the point is, you don't want him getting hurt unnecessarily. And while that moment was crazy, it was probably unnecessary. Not just for Mark Stone, but for Roman Josi,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the Predators bench is thinking the same exact thing.
Oh, yeah,
both
for sure.
Teams are thinking, okay, our best players are throwing fists at
each other
and helmets and equipment.
So there was something that happened later on in the game, and we're going to spend a lot of time on Mark Stone fighting. We're going to spend a lot of time on Mark Stone's hair.
He dropped him with one punch, and it wasn't even a good punch.
It wasn't, but it was enough.
It like, caught him on the nose. Obviously, his nose was bleeding afterwards.
Frank on the intermission reports and the post-game show was very much on the Mark Hands of Stone references.
Oh, the one that you tweeted was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
What did I tweet?
Is Roman Josi two birds because he just got killed by one stone?
That was a tweet. Did I don't
was that
remember.
You or
no,
was
no,
that
no,
somebody
I,
else?
Okay, no, I'm not taking credit for that at all. I didn't
no.
I didn't tweet that. I retweeted it.
Yeah, you retweeted it, yeah.
And so yeah, I don't know who it was, but that was the joke of the night for sure. Like it was phenomenal. A lot of really interesting and awesome moments happened in that game. Like, I know that the Golden Knights lost 5-2. Like, I know that we're probably not supposed to be as jovial as we are right now. But the Mark Stone fight was phenomenal.
Game number 7.
Okay, we'll get to that. Here are the four best moments to me from that game last night.
All right.
Mark Stone fight.
Okay.
Max Pacioretty pulling making sure he doesn't break his hand by coming over the top with a right simply to pull the helmet off of Dan Hamhuis then throwing knuckles. Like, he goes hard, right?
Veteran move.
Yeah, absolutely. Valentin Zhikov patting... Was it Fabro?
I don't remember who it was, but he patted him on the head after the penalty.
He draws a penalty. He's laying on the ice and pats a Nashville Predator on the head as if to say thank you. That was pretty good. I wish that Zhikov would interact with us like that.
Yeah, I know.
Because he doesn't.
Yeah.
Ever.
Wants nothing to do with us.
Like, at all. Did I say four? Oh,
yeah.
Philip Forsberg going between his legs at the blue line to send a cross-ice pass on the tape to, I want to say it was Ryan Ellis. That was sick. That was ridiculous.
Was it as good as his goal?
I was trying to avoid that. Like, could you imagine being George McPhee in that moment? Like, anybody but Philip Forsberg.
Flower, if you're going to give it to someone behind the net, can it not be Philip Forsberg?
Can you just help Bonino out a little bit? Like,
it was
like,
ugly.
Help your buddy out, get some goals. But yeah, not Phil Forsberg. It was a fun game, man. Like, it was an incredibly entertaining game.
It was good.
The Cody Glass setup to Mark Stone on the power play was essentially Sinbin Vegas's article on why Cody Glass makes the power play really, really good. And we talked about that in the pregame show. I mean, Cody Glass is an 82-game player, right? Like, that's
he better be.
That's been my takeaway, though, of him throughout this entire process. Like, is he going to get the majority of his points on the power play? Probably. Look at who he's playing
with. Well, unless he gets Tuck on that line, then
well, that's the
things
big question.
Change.
Where do you put Alex Tuck? Because, and we've been saying this for a long time. We've been saying it ever since we saw Cody Glass and Alex Tuck on the same line in preseason where they tried to put Alex on the left and Cody on the right. Stop that shit.
It didn't
Don't
work.
Do it.
Yeah.
Put Alex on the right. He plays a very particular style. He is a freight train. Do not have him thinking about positioning.
Yeah.
Have Cody Glass think about positioning. Do not have Alex Tuck think about positioning. If you're going to take Cody out of his natural position of center, put him on the left.
Yeah, I agree. I think you put Tuck on the right, and then you let Eakin and Glass figure out the rest.
And they will because they're
smart players.
Absolutely will. Now, we saw a little bit in terms of the third line last night not being content to just dump and chase. And when they didn't dump and chase, it led to some legitimate scoring chances. There was a play with Cody Eakin at the offensive blue line, kind of delaying a little bit, carries it over the blue line, finds Valentin Zhikov. Zhikov gets a nice shot on goal, Rinne with the save. Cody Glass, first man on that puck after the rebound, throws it through the middle of the slot. Like, those are the types of plays that that line's going to need to make. Can they make them more readily if Cody Glass is the center?
I don't know, to be honest. If it's better with Glass as the center and Eakin as the wing, go for it. If it's better with Eakin as the center and Glass as the wing, I really don't care. I just want Alex Tuck on the right where he belongs. And the biggest difference is when you put Alex Tuck on that, you mentioned it. You don't want him dumping pucks in.
No.
Cody Glass is not great at winning board battles yet. He's 20 years old and he gets out-muscled sometimes. Cody Eakin's decent at it. But you don't want that line dumping it. You want them carrying it into the zone. And who's maybe the best at gaining zone entry on the entire Golden Knights team? It's Alex Tuck.
Yeah, and I want to say yesterday somebody had asked me that question. Like, if Tuck comes or when Tuck comes back, we've been talking about the third line carrying the puck into the zone versus dumping and chasing. How does that work? Well, Tuck is phenomenal at it. That's his job on the power play.
It may be his best attribute as a hockey player is just using his speed and his body as a shield to bring the puck into the zone. That's what he does for the power play.
From blue line to blue line, Alex Tuck is probably the best on the Golden Knights at getting through traffic and making sure you get into the zone. And after that, if you are able to dump the puck off to Cody Glass or Cody Eakin, and then you're Alex Tuck and you can get to the front of the net, you're going to score goals.
I've really noticed in the last few games, Cody Glass is so good at creating space for himself in the offensive zone. He doesn't use his body. He's not real fast. He's just really smart at finding space. When he gets the puck into the zone, he turns the right way. He gets that extra foot away from the defenseman and is able to make a pass. He's just really good.
We've heard Pacioretty, we've heard Stone talk about Cody Glass and the things that they say, Stastny too. He makes the right play every single time.
Yeah.
And it's not like 90% of the time. It's not 80% of the time. It is every single time Cody Glass has a decision to make. It is the right decision. And that's it. And you don't see that very much from young players.
And on that power play, like, I'm pretty much ready to say Cody Glass is the best player on the team on the power play. He's better than Pacioretty. He's better than Stone. He is who everything runs through on the power play.
So
they run everything through him in that bottom corner.
It's really funny because I talked to Ken yesterday on pregame, and we talked about that. The differences in what Cody Glass does and how he opens everything up when he's presented as a passing option from below the goal line. And it's ridiculous.
And not just below the goal line, in the crease, too. When he comes out front, like, he had a pass last night that between the legs behind the back, and it got intercepted, but it was going to be a tap-in for Stone.
And he's done that a couple of times already. He'll kind of drift into that space. He'll be behind the goal line. He'll drift in. That puck will get to him, and he knows what he has. Like, he already knows what the play is that he's going to make. It's just, it's going to convert at some point, and it's going to be lethal. But Cody opens up so many options because it spreads the penalty killers out, and it allows you to get passes through the middle of the box.
Yes.
And that's what you need in terms of power play. You're never going to be efficient if you cannot break down the box. And until you do that, you're passing around. You're passing around the perimeter. You're not getting traffic in front. You're allowing the goaltender to see shots easily. You're allowing the defenders to read your passing lanes. He opens up so much on the ice for that unit. They're incredibly lethal. The question is, the second unit, how the hell do you make them better?
They haven't been good. I mean, with them, it's like, to be honest, for one, Alex Tuch helps a lot.
Sure.
Right now, it's Zikov on that unit. You could switch out for Eakin. Is that really going to help you all that much? No. Tuch being in that net front guy helps a lot on that unit. So I will say, when Tuch comes back, which, by the way, we got updates today, just came from practice. Gerard Gallant finally gave us some injury updates. Credit to Ken from Sinbin for asking.
This is ridiculous.
He actually gave us timelines. Malcolm Subban remains day-to-day, so not much on him, but it's not super serious.
I have a question. Can it still be day-to-day if it's been a week?
Yeah. Okay. I think so, because if it's day-to-day, you're thinking, okay, it might be, but it's been longer than a week. It might be 8 days. It might be 9 days. It might be 10 days.
Tomorrow will be a week.
Whereas if it's week to week, it's like, he may be out 2 weeks. He may be out 3 weeks. We don't know. I don't know. I think it can be day-to-day, and it can be over a week.
I'm frustrated by the classifications.
Okay.
That's all. What about Alex Tuch?
Alex Tuch should be playing in a week or two, was Gerard Gallant's.
So he's still week to week.
But week to week can mean 7 weeks. It can mean 8 weeks. It can mean 9 weeks. It can mean 175 weeks.
Okay. I will take the win. Alex Tuch will be playing in 1 to 2 weeks, which means he's likely 5 to 6 days out from practicing.
He said he should start skating soon. Now, the big one,
Nate Schmidt. Nate Schmidt.
Same exact answer, a week or two until he's playing, which is a massive win for the Golden Knights, considering we thought it could be season ending. We thought it could be half the season. Like, it looked like when that knee injury happened, it looked like this could be bad.
It looked like another 20 game span without Nate Schmidt at the minimum.
Yeah, the fact that he's classifying Nate Schmidt and Alex Tuch basically the same. He's like, they're both about a week or two away from playing. He's like, it could be longer than that. I don't want you to hold me to it. But I think they'll be playing in a week or two, which is good news.
So I know that we've seen this question a lot. Are the Golden Nuts?
Found the
That's the name of the podcast. Name, yeah. Jesus. Just gonna let that one sit for a minute. Are the Golden Knights good enough defensively with Nate Schmidt? And I think when you look at what their record is with Schmidt in the lineup versus Schmidt out of the lineup, they're an elite team with Schmidt. They're below average without him. He's a number one defenseman. Is he, as you mentioned, is he top 20? No, probably not. But he's still a number one defenseman on this team.
There are plenty of teams in the NHL he'd be their best defenseman. Now, there are plenty of teams that he wouldn't be their best defenseman.
Sure.
But I'd say they're eight, nine, 10 teams in the league where Nate Schmidt's the best defenseman on the team.
And understand that a lot of what Nate does and a lot of what makes his effect and his impact so great is not necessarily just him and his skill set. It's Shea Theodore doesn't have to play top minutes. It's everyone else fits in a structure that is significantly better for their skill set and makes them better by comparison. It shifts everybody down and makes it so that you're not having to overplay Nick Holden or John Merrill even. Like, it allows you so much more flexibility and it makes everyone else around him better. And that's the effect of Nate Schmidt being in or out of the lineup.
I would also like to add, because I get this question a lot too, like, even with Schmidt, are they good enough to win a Stanley Cup defensively?
Please say top five.
They may be top five. But last year, I mean, every defensive metric, they were top five. But
top five.
This is what... So before the season, we were breaking down the forward lines, and we're like, okay, is the third line going to work? It's going to be Eakin, Tuck, and Peary. It's gonna be, we pretty much ruled Cody Glass out of it, because at that time, it looked like he wasn't going to be on this team. 3 weeks later... We're talking about he's the best player on the power play. He's completely changed the power play, the way they run the power play. He's a contributor on the third line. Once they get Tuck back, you're expecting that third line to, like, he is making a major impact on this team.
Yep.
What if one of the rookie defensemen can do something to a lesser extent but similar? By the end of this season, Nick Hague is going to have a ton of games under his belt. Remember, this is all for the playoffs. We're all trying to get to the playoffs, and it's this for this team, regular season doesn't matter. They're going to make the playoffs. It's all about being the best team you can be when the playoffs get here. And I would argue that whether it's Nick Hague, whether it's Zach Whitecloud when he comes back from an injury, whether Dylan Coghlan gets his chance, whether it's Bischoff, he's up here, if he ever gets a chance to play, maybe the improvement from the defense comes from three-fourths of the way through the year, Nick Hague is playing second-pairing minutes, and he's on the power play, and he's a major contributor to this team. And right now, that doesn't seem like... It seems like that's, like, so far out because he hasn't been great playing with England. They've struggled. But I think it's fair to assume one of those guys is going to play really well and improve.
So you've got Whitecloud, you've got Coghlan, you've got Bischoff, you've got Hague. Those are the four.
And right? Schultz.
And I forgot about Schultz. Jeez. I understand what you're saying. And I think the improvement has to come from one of those guys because the Golden Knights are a team that's up against the cap. They're a team that is expected to contend, and they put a ton of their money into goaltending and top line forwards and a fighter.
Yeah.
So my point is, it's going to have to come from one of those guys.
Yeah.
They have to have a game breaker to some extent on the back end, even if it's just Nick Hague being a power play guy.
Which, by the way, Shea Theodore is playing the power play. And when I say playing the power play, he's not on power play unit number one. He's not on power. He plays the power play.
Gallant legitimately puts him out to start the power play. Doesn't matter if the top unit is out there or the second unit is out there. And I loved his press conference last night.
When I asked
him. He's like... Yeah, sometimes Shea's a little slow to make the change.
Yeah, sometimes he doesn't make the changes as quick as we'd like. Because I asked him, I was like,
are you going 2 minutes with this
because
guy?
Because I'm trying to figure out, like, do you not like Nick Hague on the power play? Because it seems ridiculous to play a guy for 2 minute shift on the power play. Shea Theodore has handled it decently. It's not like he's been bad on the power play, but so I basically asked him, I'm like, do you want Shea Theodore to play the entire power play? Or is that just kind of what you're stuck with? And he's like, yeah. We'd like him to change a little faster, but he ended up saying, like, we want Hague to get the last, like, 40 seconds of it. Get the whatever's left over. Basically, Theodore, you play until you can't play anymore, and then crawl over to the bench, and we'll let Nick Hague get whatever's left.
See, I would like to say that you do the same thing with Cody Glass. Play Cody Glass 2 minutes.
Especially because on that third line, he's not getting as many five-on-five minutes as he should.
Exactly.
You can use him on that. I wouldn't disagree with that at all.
Because he's been so good there.
And it's not like he expends a ton of energy on the power play because he's just kind of chilling down there. I mean,
and he's controlling everything, too. And when he's on the ice, they don't lose the puck as much as when He's on the ice. Period. Yeah. Like, they're able to keep the zone. They're able to set up with Cody Glass on the ice. The problem with the second unit is they cannot keep the zone, and they cannot enter the zone.
They've had a hard time.
It's been really difficult for them to get sustained zone time on the power play.
I think Tuck helps a lot. First off, we just talked about how great he is at zone entry.
Sure.
I think that helps that unit a lot. And he creates havoc in front of the net. I actually asked Gallant about it last night. I feel like there's a difference in philosophy when it comes to the power play with this team. Because last year, the power play strategy was pass it around. Colin Miller hits it as hard as he can towards the net. And I strongly say towards the net, not at the net, because it's in the general vicinity of the net, but usually not at it.
He's Fulton Reed.
They haven't done that. And Shea Theodore, same thing last year. Look at Shea Theodore's shot totals from last year. They are through the roof. This year, he's not taking shots from the point. They're throwing it back to Theodore to reset, and he gets it over the other side, but he doesn't fire it from the post, and they're not even screening the, Mark Stone is usually in the middle, but he's not in the middle screening the goalie. He's in the middle waiting for a pass from Cody Glass,
night. They're doing what efficient power plays do. They're working around the perimeter. They're exploiting a weakness once that box expands, and then they're finding the lanes and making quick decisions.
Which is completely different from this. And, they weren't terrible on the power play. They were, 14th, I think, last year, which is middle of the pack. But they were 14th by just firing pucks at the net and getting rebounds and getting deflections. They're doing a completely, they're approaching it completely differently.
Do you remember last year you were in St. Louis, and the Golden Knights were playing against the St. Louis Blues, and you were watching the Blues practice, and they were practicing that play. It is
the play that Stone scored on last night.
It is blue line, below the goal line, into the slot, goal.
Yes.
You can do that when you have highly, highly skilled players.
Yes.
With great vision and an understanding of how to evade coverage.
Cody Glass's vision is so good, he doesn't even need to look where he's passing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. That's a great moment. That game, again.
He's not looking at all. The best part about the no look was, it wasn't like he looked at another player and then passed it to Stone. No, he looked off into the abyss, into the corner. He looked at the fans sitting in the front row.
He was winking at a kid in the front row. That's what he was doing.
And just dished it right to Stone. By the way, kind of how you brought back that Blues game, and before the game, I texted you or tweeted or whatever. I'm like, the Blues are going to score a goal like this in this exact play on the power play, and then they did.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll try to call my shot again, see if it works. Cody Glass is going to score a power play goal by catching it right there next to the net, faking the pass to Stone, the one that set up the goal last night, and firing it short side top corner over that goalie's shoulder, because the goalies are going to start cheating out to Stone when he makes that move. And today I was watching, so Pacioretty and it wasn't Stone, it was Pacioretty. Pacioretty and Glass were out there early today on the ice by themselves with Ryan Craig, assistant coach. And they were practicing. Craig throws it down to Glass. Glass passes it to Pacioretty for the one-timer. But then every other time, Glass would take it, fake that pass, and just whip it up into the top corner of the net. And he elevates that puck quick. It's going to be tougher with the goalie there because he's kind of you're so close to him, it's hard to elevate it. But sure. I'm telling you, that's going to happen at some point.
So Cody Glass will score high short side, bar down on the power play.
Maybe not bar down, but yeah. But we're talking
have to.
from within 2 feet of the goalie, right on the doorstep, he's just going to roof it. Watch, it's going to happen. I'm telling you.
So, if Cody Glass is an 82-game player, Cody Glass on your third line, that means Valentin Zhikov's automatically the odd man out?
Looks like it.
Should it be?
No.
Who should be?
Here we go again.
I'm just asking you a question.
Based off of performance, Ryan Reeves should be out of the lineup.
So Will Carrier's had a little bit of something.
He's played well.
I think he's been good.
He's created more offense than I think he's ever created as a Golden Knight.
And you have to understand that with Will Carrier, it's very interesting. We see him in practice. We see how fast he is. We see that there are some offensive instincts there. And when they take over, he makes really interesting plays that can result in goal-scoring opportunities. Like the play that happened last night in the game in which Tomáš Nosek splits the D, passes off to the wing to Will Carrier. Carrier uses his vision, spots Ryan Reeves breaking to the far post, passes to Reeves, and I don't even think they got a shot on goal.
He shot it into the defenseman.
It was blocked.
Which it was actually a really good play by that defenseman to get all the way over there and slide across. But that pass by Carrier, and I remember I looked over at you. I thought it was Nosek who made the pass over, but I was wrong. It was Carrier. But he whipped that pass hard through three different sticks right onto Reeves' tape. It was a really impressive pass.
Oh yeah, for sure. It really was. And that's the thing. With Ryan Reeves on that line, you're going to be able to bang bodies. You're going to be able to make those heavy physical plays down low. But, and I know he scored two games ago. I get it. I do. But at the same time, wouldn't it be nice if there's a little bit of an extra scoring threat on your fourth line?
I think, and when I say Reeves is out of the lineup based off of their performance, I'm not saying send Ryan Reeves to the AHL. I'm saying that should be a rotation. It should be the rotation on the fourth line. I hate how the Golden Knights, the way it's set up right now is, okay, we take care of our top six, and then we've got our bottom line set, and then we kind of fill in the remainder with the third line, right? The third line has kind of been the, usually it should work from the top down, and the fourth line should be the extra parts, but it's actually been the opposite. The fourth line has been pretty much set for 2 years, and the third line gets the extra parts. It gets when someone has to be scratched, it was Brandon Peary.
Yeah.
It was the third line, not the fourth line. Whereas I think it should be the opposite. I think the third line should be set. Eakin, Tuck, Glass, whatever you want to do. And then the fourth line should be, you know what? Reeves hasn't been great for the last two games. Let's put Carrier in there. Carrier plays good. If Carrier has a bad couple games, let's throw Reeves back in there. Oh, he played bad? Let's put Zikov in there. Let's screw it. Throw Brandon Peary in there. I would rather that rotation of guys and just trying to find the hot hand, I would rather that be on the fourth line and not the third line.
I agree with you. I don't know that I want to see a strict rotation, though. What I want to see is trying to match up that line to what would best break down your opponent.
That's also,
you know what I mean?
Different teams require different things.
If you're going up against a team that isn't particularly physical and or a team that is really good at evading forechecks, does it make sense to have both Carrier and Reeves on the same line in the same game? No,
probably not
really. If you are also playing a team that has really good scoring depth top to bottom, lines 1 through 4, you need more scoring depth on your fourth line. At that point, maybe it does make sense to put Peary and Zikov in there just to see if they can give you that extra goal that you might need in a crucial situation. I'm 100% with you. The fourth line should be the line where you don't really know what you're going to get out of every single game, but if they chip in, it's great.
Yeah, which is what the third line has been up until now, because
yes,
it's been first, second, fourth are set. Every day when we go to practice and we look at the morning, the line rushes, you can pretty much ignore 1, 2, and 4.
Sure.
The only line we're really watching for is 3 to see what they're going to do. I want that flipped. I want the third line to be, it's Tuck, Eakin, and Glass. Don't touch it. And then mess with that fourth line, whether it's matching opponents, whether it's riding the hot hand, because we know Gerard Gallant. If a guy comes in and plays well, he ain't coming out of the lineup. He's staying in there until he doesn't play well. So if it's Ryan Reeves who's got the hot hand, which we've seen, he's had hot streaks where he scores a few goals.
Yeah.
Keep him in there. And even if he's not scoring goals, if he's just lighting guys up and he's creating good energy, keep him in there. But then he has a couple games like he's had these last two games where he's an absolute disaster. And when he's an absolute disaster, don't keep playing him. Put Zikov there. Put Peary there. Put Carrier there. Put someone else there.
If for no other reason, just so that you know he knows he's got to work for it. If you keep throwing a guy out there that's not making the types of plays that you expect him to make in all three zones, then you need to sit him down. You need to have him watch a game from the press box. It'll make him a better player.
Just like they're doing with Peary right now.
100%.
Peary didn't do a damn thing for three games, whatever he was in. When he comes back in, I bet he's firing at the net.
He has to be.
He will be, I promise you. When Peary gets back in, and he will, he's going to get back in there eventually, watch how fast he fires it at the net.
So a lot of people are concerned about Marc-Andre Fleury playing too much. 7 games in. Now,
I'm kind of the leader on that. Don't play Fleury a lot.
Here's my theory. If Garrett Sparks gets recalled, Marc-Andre Fleury will get a game off. If Garrett Sparks does not get recalled, Marc-Andre Fleury is going to start until Malcolm Subban is ready to go.
Yeah,
I do not believe this organization has the confidence that they need to have in Oscar Dansk to start a game and expect to win.
I will say, game one of the AHL season
did nothing to help their confidence at all.
That, okay, I wasn't even going to bring up what actually happened in that game, but
go ahead, do it.
Dansk did give up 7 goals on like 24 shots or something. It was bad. But the point I was going to make was the Chicago Wolves basically named Dansk the number one goalie. They had both Sparks and Dansk, and they were both sent down the exact same day. Yeah. They had the exact same amount of time with the team, and I don't know if it's just because he was there last year and that's like their guy or what it was, but game one, Dansk was in net, not Sparks.
And so, and we all know what happened.
And Dansk got lit up.
Yes. So here's the thing. I think Marc-Andre Fleury last night was not mentally sharp in the game. He made a mistake. It cost him.
He
was fine otherwise, but a lot of those goals, he probably makes the save.
I'm trying to think. I mean,
two of them
were deflected.
I give him no chance on the Yarncroke goal. The play by Arvidsson around the net.
One-timer,
I mean, that was, and it's funny because when you break it down, so Arvidsson is going around the net. Fleury goes from his right post to his left post. So he goes lateral. By the time he gets to his left post, the puck has already been passed out to Yarncroke. So he's got to readjust, get off his knees, push out, and by the time he does that, puck's already behind him. There's nothing he can do there.
The thing is, when someone hits a puck that hard, as a goalie, you're in good positioning, and it either hits you or it doesn't hit you. you're not going to see that shot and react to it. There's no human being on earth that can react to that shot. He murdered that puck.
Yeah, the Colton Sissons goal, he makes the initial save. Derek Englund can't clear the rebound. Ryan Reeves is chilling in the slot.
And then it goes off of Englund's skate.
And it goes off in it.
So that one isn't Fleury's fault.
No.
He made the initial save, and then a defenseman, it went off their skating in.
He has to wear the Forsberg one.
He passed it to Forsberg, and he scored. That's one goal that's on him.
Yeah.
The Sissons goal we just said isn't on him. The Yarncroke one we just said wasn't on him. And the other two were deflected in front of him. There's no way he makes that save. So the only goal that was really his fault was clearly the one he passed it to, and he wasn't in net when it was scored. That was all him. But with a goalie that's as aggressive as Fleury, and Fleury helps their breakout so much by being back behind that net, 1 out of every 100 times, he's going to screw it up. That's what you have to live with. But the other 99 times, it's awesome. And he helps you get possession. He doesn't let the forecheck get in. He's great at it. But if you're going to have a goalie that does that, it's just like Mike Smith in wherever the hell Mike Smith is now. He's in Calgary.
Edmonton.
He's going to make a bunch of really good plays with stick handling,
yeah,
and then he's going to give up a goal.
Now, yeah, I don't know, man. I think with Fleury, you have to start seriously considering managing the minutes.
Oh, I agree.
You really do, because he was absolutely phenomenal on the back-to-backs. He was good against Calgary. He was great against LA. He still made a number of great saves last night, but I just don't feel like he was as sharp as we've seen him. And I feel like a lot of that has to do with the fact that he played essentially 4 games in 6 nights, 3 2/3 of a game in 6 nights, and 3 and 4. Like,
yeah.
you can't continue to do that stuff with him.
I'm not as worried about the short term. Like, I don't think Fleury was tired last night. I don't think you could play him the first 20 games of the season. In game 21, I don't think he's going to be tired. But if you play him 60 games, when April gets here, his body will be worn down. It will happen.
Yeah, the mileage, man, it's too much.
And you see these saves he's making. He's in the last like 4 games, he's made like 6 save of the year candidates, and they're all lateral movement, exploding across the crease and getting his pad on it. And when you play 65 games and you get to the playoffs, that is a millisecond slower than it normally is. And it's the difference between, oh my God, Fleury just saved our asses, what a save, to, That's a goal. Fleury shouldn't have got there. He couldn't have gotten to it. There's no way he could have gotten there. But if he was as fresh as he was in October and November, he would have gotten to it. The only way to keep him that fresh into April when you need him to be that fresh is play the backup. It's a long game.
Is Malcolm Subban going to be ready for the back-to-backs on Monday and Tuesday? If he's not, will Marc-Andre Fleury play both of them?
I don't
think he should.
I think Fleury gets one of them off. Whether it's Dansk, Sparks, or Subban, I think he gets one of them off.
I think it'll be Sparks.
And it wouldn't surprise me if it's Pittsburgh that they give him off.
They give him off Pittsburgh? I don't think they do that.
They did it last year, didn't they?
I don't think they... Yeah, they did, but I don't think they do.
It was Washington and Pittsburgh, and they gave him Pittsburgh off.
I don't think they should give him Pittsburgh off. I feel like... if there's ever a game that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be locked in, it's that game.
Yeah, I agree. I would play him then too, but they did it last year. They did give him Pittsburgh off.
Well, Pittsburgh isn't the first. Pittsburgh isn't the back-to-back game.
It's the first of the back-to-back.
No.
It's Pittsburgh-Philly.
Pittsburgh's. No.
It's Pittsburgh-Philly back-to-back. Yes, it is. I'm going on the trip. I've booked all these hotels. They better be.
I think you're wrong.
I'm in the wrong city.
I'm going to check this out real quick because I honestly think you're wrong. And like, I know it's a bit and everything, but it would be really funny if you've booked all this and you're wrong. Yeah, no, you're absolutely wrong.
What are you talking about?
It is Pittsburgh and Philly. Pittsburgh's on Saturday. Philly's on Monday.
And then Chicago?
It's not a back-to-back. It's Philly-Chicago is the back-to-back. So clearly,
those hotels
you need to make sure that you're not going to be screwed on a hotel, buddy.
Full information here. I'm actually not going to Philly. I'm going to Pittsburgh, and then I'm going straight to Chicago.
So
that's why I didn't.
Have you been to Pittsburgh?
Yes. I was in the game in Pittsburgh last year.
You were at the game in Pittsburgh? Yeah. Okay. What a weird city, man.
It's to be honest, because it was a back-to-back last year, it was Washington-Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I was in the city of Pittsburgh for like 18 hours, and I literally went like airport, hotel, arena, hotel, airport, out of there.
I
didn't see much of the city.
Gorgeous. It is a phenomenal city. It's the architecture is fantastic.
It's very old. I feel like I'm watching like a movie from like the Industrial Revolution.
Oh, for sure.
When I'm in Pittsburgh.
100%.
Yeah.
We drove through, and we wound up going over one of the bridges. I don't know the name of it. I'm not from Pittsburgh. I don't know it. But we went through a bridge.
They have a lot of bridges.
Yeah, I know. And it was one of the most horrifying experiences of my entire life, driving in Pittsburgh.
Really?
It was insane.
I never have to drive in these
cities
because I always Uber everywhere.
Don't drive. Like, it was horrifying. It was awesome. It's great. Horrifying.
Yeah, so this trip, I'm actually, like I said, I'm going to Pittsburgh. Then I'm skipping Philly and going straight to Chicago because I'm going to see two Wolves games while I'm out there.
Oh, nice.
And get to talk to, like, El Venice, who's been killing it out there. Talk to those guys, do a little prospect update. But, yeah, so luckily my hotel rooms aren't dependent on me knowing which game's a back-to-back. But, yes, I definitely had that wrong.
So my guess.
So it's Philly and then in Chicago the next night.
Fleury plays against Ottawa, against Pittsburgh, against Philly. Garrett Sparks plays against Chicago. That's my guess.
That would make it easy because you wouldn't have to call Sparks up. You could just...
Exactly.
Hey, you're driving to Allstate instead of whatever the hell the Wolves Arena is today.
100%.
Or no, is the Wolves Arena Allstate Arena?
I don't know.
American Airlines Center?
American Airlines is
the Blackhawks. So I think Allstate Arena is the Wolves Arena.
How is it the Blackhawks have become so irrelevant that we don't even know the name of their arena anymore? That's crazy. All right. Any other keys, takeaways for you from the first seven games of the season in which the Golden Knights are currently 4-3?
The bottom pairing is an issue.
It's been an issue.
It's
going to be an issue.
It's a major issue.
Is it an issue because of Nick Hague or because of Derek Englund?
To be honest,
both.
I want to say Derek Englund. The easy answer is it's Derek Englund and he's making Nick Hague look terrible, but we don't know. We haven't seen Nick Hague in the NHL with anyone else, so maybe Nick Hague is reading plays wrong, and it's making Derek Englund's life difficult. And if there's one thing in this world Derek Englund doesn't need, it's his life to be more difficult on the rink because he struggles on his own. If you put him with someone like a rookie who's struggling, maybe it's a little bit of both. I don't want to put it all on Derek Englund, but I will say it would be nice to see Nick Hague with someone else to see if he can play better because the numbers on that pairing are abysmal. Like, not good. Just complete disaster.
You don't need the numbers.
And it undermines.
Eye test for that pairing is not good.
And because they're so bad, it undermines everything. Like, the other two pairings and the four forward lines will be rolling. The game's awesome. And then those guys get on the ice, and it just deflates everything you're doing and completely changes the momentum of the game.
Fourth line, third pairing together.
It's bad. And that's what happened with the Sissons goal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
They kind of just stood there and watched him score. Fleury made like six saves, but couldn't make the seventh one.
All right. We're gonna go to the mailbag now. Because for whatever reason, you guys continue to ask us questions and we are going to continue to answer them. So yep. First one up from some dude 88. Do we really need Reeves when we have Stone and Pacioretty as our new enforcers? Follow-up question, Glass versus Ekholm, with a actual question mark. I liked Cody Glass not necessarily backing down from Matthias Ekholm. I thought it was a pretty bad look for Ekholm at 29 and a complete veteran of this game to swat away the arm of Cody Glass like a 3-year-old throwing a temper tantrum,
yeah,
and then chirping him, and then Cody Glass not backing down, and then doing the same thing to 20-year-old Nick Hague. I thought it was just kind of a weird spot for Matthias Ekholm to be in, and a weird spot for him to like make his stand with those two rookies. But I liked Cody Glass's bite in that situation a little bit. Of course, I don't want him dropping the gloves, especially not with Matthias Ekholm, but I do
that
like
that would end poorly for Cody Glass.
But I do like a little bit of that snarl, a little bit of that bite.
I like that you can see the confidence exuding from that kid. The snark in which he looked at him like, yeah, what are you going to do?
Like, you? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And like, this kid's played 7 games in the NHL. And he already has that. He did it in Chicago. I wrote the story about last year during the AHL playoffs where he wore the like Wolves biker jacket for whoever is the best player of the game. Like, he stepped onto that team and was immediately a just leader in the locker room, a guy that everybody likes. Like, and he's done it in the NHL. It's just amazing how quickly that's happened.
I like that Cody Glass is getting the attention of the opposition so much that otherwise good, decent, honest players are getting so frustrated by him that they get taken out of their game. That's awesome. As far as do we really need Reeves when we have Stone and Pacioretty as our new enforcers, fight so far on the year, Pacioretty 1, Stone 1, Reeves none. So maybe. But at the same time, what are fights going to do for you?
Yeah,
like, they don't do anything for you. Like, in certain situations, they're necessary. Like, as much as you don't want to see Roman Josi and Mark Stone fight, that was a completely fine, okay fight. You had a moment happen. You had Roman Josi pissed off at Mark Stone for a high stick. You had Mark Stone pissed off for a cross check that he got from Roman Josi. The two guys squared up. There was nothing dirty about it. They dropped the gloves. And it happened sometime.
And
in the
Stone stopped punching him as soon as he went down.
He went
down
and everything. Yeah. It was a clean break. Like, those things happen. It didn't carry over. Josi wasn't taking cheap shots at Stone throughout the game. Stone wasn't taking cheap shots at Josi. We can talk about Forsberg later because that was pretty bad hit.
Yeah.
But the point being, like, if a fight happens organically, sure. But you don't need somebody, you don't need anybody on your team running around for 60 minutes, chirping guys, trying to get them to drop the gloves. It doesn't do anything for you in the game, period, end quote.
How many times has Ryan Reeves stepped up for someone on the Golden Knights and fought somebody? Zero. Zero times.
You're probably right.
That part of the game does not exist anymore. It used to exist. 20 years ago, it absolutely existed. 10 years ago, it kind of existed. It doesn't anymore. You know, look, I was so negative on Reeves when they got him. Obviously, he's played better than that. If you want, this is my argument. If you want Ryan Reeves in the lineup, your argument should be for hockey reasons. He's hard on the forecheck. He finishes checks and opposing defensemen don't like it. If even 1% of your argument for why Ryan Reeves should be on the ice is his fighting ability, you're an idiot, and you're wrong. He shouldn't be on the ice for that. So do you not need Mark? Do you not need Reeves because Mark Stone and Pacioretty are enforcers? No, I don't want him to be an enforcer. I don't want Max Pacioretty to be an enforcer. I don't want an enforcer. Don't have one.
Enforcers don't exist anymore.
They don't need to exist because that's not part of the game. Like I said, I'm not saying take Ryan Reeves out because there are hockey reasons for him being in the game. Fighting's not one of them.
CJ Bear 71 or Christopher Boyd. Glad I didn't screw that up. Is it time to break up the Englund-Hague experiment? Hague's indecision at times look awful, especially in the defensive zone. Is it time to actually try? Can't believe I'm saying this. Jake Bischoff or call up Coughlin? Well, the issue with Coughlin is that he plays the right side. So unless you're planning on sitting Derek Englund, I don't know that you do that at this point. Or I suppose you could try Coughlin on the second pair with John Merrill and move Holden to the left to play with Englund because Holden is versatile in that way. But
Holden's played way better on the right, though.
But sure. Nick Holden's been good.
Yeah, like on the right.
He's been good. And I don't know that it's like an automatic that Nick Hague stays in the lineup when Nate Schmidt comes back. I would even probably say that Nick Holden and Derek Englund might be the pairing you get on the bottom pair. It's very much possible that that's what you end up getting.
Or you get Shea back with Englund because Holden and Merrill have been good, and Shea has played with Englund a lot.
You cannot make Derek Englund play more at 5-on-5.
Yeah.
And Shea Theodore needs to play minutes at 5-on-5.
I think Derek Englund should be the one out.
I agree with you 100%.
Play two of the kids, and one of them is Schmidt's back.
The reason why I say this is you can live with the mistakes from Nick Hague because he's 20 and he's learning. I don't know that at this point you can live with those types of mistakes coming from Derek Englund.
He just looks so slow. He gets the guy, like, there have been so many shots on goal that because the guy just goes around him and shoots it. And like they haven't been particularly high danger chances because it's from an angle and yeah. Fleury's pretty good at cutting off that angle and staying tight, but it's not ideal. So I mean, we've kind of already went over because how bad that pairing was, but yeah. I don't think, like, it seems like Christopher is more on Hague is hurting Englund when I think it could be the other way around.
I agree. Do you think, this is from Taylor Robb, do you think the Preds were ticked off enough about their captain getting the one-punch drop down that they rallied to win? No, I think that they took advantage of the Golden Knights having their fourth line and third pair on the ice early in the second period. And then just continue to take advantage and be opportunistic. Like, I don't think that the Mark Stone Roman Josi fight had much of an impact on the outcome of that game at all.
Yeah. And I think it was Dave Shane who asked Gallant if the fight was a factor, and Gallant basically like laughed it off. Like, nah, it had nothing to do with it. What he said, which is a good point, is the Predators were a team that was pissed off, not because their captain just got knocked out, but because they just got embarrassed against the Kings 7-4 the game before that. They got just the floor mopped with them by the LA Kings. The LA Kings. It's like an AHL team just murdered you.
No,
so
it's a good team.
They were not angry. They were not happy with that. And they came into T-Mobile Arena angry and took it out on the Golden Knights.
This one is Everyone Loves Vegas. Can Marchessault play D?
No.
Or he just relies on Riley Smith to pick up the slack all the time.
Oh, like, does he play defense as a forward? Okay.
Yes.
I thought we were putting him on the blue line for a second.
No. Maybe on the power play.
I think Marchessault's been excellent.
I thought that whole line has been relatively fine.
The fact that that line hasn't given up a scoring chance, I think, this season, why are we questioning any of their defensive ability?
Because they're not scoring goals.
Yeah, but this is about defense, right?
I get it. I hear you. My point is,
let me read this tweet. Maybe I'm misunderstanding the tweet.
Here it is. Can Marchessault play D, or he just relies on Riley Smith to pick up the slack all the time? That's the tweet. So it's implying that Jonathan Marchessault's two-way game is not very good because he gets bailed out almost always by Riley Smith.
I completely disagree with that.
I think Marchessault's good.
I think Marchessault has been awesome. I think those three players are the absolute, if we're going down the list of things that need to be fixed on this team, they are the last three things you need to worry about. They are the three best players on the team right now.
The only thing with that line is that it's not clicking at the rate that you would want it to.
Well, you'd like them to finish.
They're getting scoring chances. They're getting more scoring chances than they're giving up. The only problem is most of them, unless they come off the stick of Riley Smith, are not going in. That's it.
Carlson's hit the goalie a lot, and he needs to put a couple of those in. But, I mean, that line is just completely dominating the puck when they're on the ice. So, just like when Carlson scored 43 goals, and everyone said, he's not going to do that again. It's going to come back to the mean. And it did. This line should have 15 goals right now. They've only got 6. It will average out. And eventually, watch, it's going to happen. There's going to be 3 games where those guys combine for like 6 goals. It's going to happen.
T. Simpson, LV, who is the best back checker on the team?
William Carlson. Are we talking forwards?
I would think you'd have to go forwards on
William Carlson. Or Mark Stone. It's one of them too.
I want to default to Stone. Because
Stone's awesome.
Mainly because his stick makes up for so much and he breaks up so many different plays. In terms of utilizing speed and making it difficult and putting pressure, I would say probably William Carlson. But Stone's stick is so good that even if he's not there on top of a guy, he can still make a play and break up the puck. Probably those two guys.
Yeah, and then I think Riley Smith would probably be number 3. But those two are phenomenal.
Marchessault or Eakin, 4?
Yeah.
4 and 5?
Yeah, that's about right.
There it is. Night Train. Can we trade Reeves and bring in some veteran defensive help? I still think he's hurt, but even if not, he's sure not doing much.
I don't think you can trade Ryan Reeves. You're not going to get much back from that. I don't think anyone wants that contract. And I said this on the Q&A yesterday on The Athletic, I do think there's a move at the deadline with this team. Bill Foley has said it multiple times, and George McPhee has said it once, that they believe they will have salary cap space at the deadline. Why would they say that unless there is something in their mind thinking, if we nickel and dime this salary cap for 3 months, it will, because for those that don't know, the salary cap is added daily. Mm-hmm. It's counted daily. And for the last 2 weeks, they've only had 22 players on this roster when you're allowed 23. Why? Because every day that there's not a 23rd player on the roster, that's a few thousand dollars you're saving. And that adds up over the season. Eventually, one of these guys, like you see Nate Schmidt, he's getting paid good money. Alex Tuck's getting paid good money. Their contracts, because it was put on long-term IR, aren't counting. They're adding little tiny pieces here. And this isn't something we can look up because we simply don't have that number
right
available to us. But they are adding salary cap space here and there. And I think that when the deadline comes, I don't think it's going to be, they aren't trading for Eric Carlson. This isn't like when they were trying to get Eric Carlson.
They wouldn't trade for Eric Carlson anyway.
Well, I'm just saying this isn't a blockbuster move, but I do think that when the deadline gets closer, if Nick Hague steps up and is for the defense what Cody Glass has been for the offense, no need. But if that doesn't happen, and if we're sitting here in 2 months and we're saying, we're in coming towards the end of January and we're saying, man, this defense still doesn't have quite enough, I think there's room in February to make a move for a mid-level defenseman who makes like $4 or $5 million a year. Because remember, when you trade for him, you're only getting the portion of his contract that's the remaining of the season, which is not a whole lot. I do think I could see them making a move for a mid-tier guy around the deadline to bolster this blue line.
I don't know what Petrangelo makes.
That would be a good one.
I'm going to look that up. Hold on.
That would be a good one.
Because if they could afford, I feel like Petrangelo's somewhere between 5 and 6. If they could make 6 work, I would, I don't know, man. I for whatever reason, I'm just going to like put it out into the universe and see what happens.
Because Falk, well, we were the ones that talked about Stone 2 weeks before the deadline. We
not
literally dedicated
an entire back or anything.
My back is injured from patting myself on the back so much. I don't know if it's quite like I was thinking someone a little
I'm shooting for the stars, man.
Yeah,
come on.
I mean that's way up there.
It's Cup or bust.
But I do think there is going to be a minor move at the deadline to bolster the blue line. That's something I could see happening.
I also don't think that I can see the St. Louis Blues relinquishing Alex Petrangelo to a potential team that they could face in the Western Conference final.
Assuming St. Louis is still in it.
Well, assuming they're good. But that's for another day. I just would love to see it because I think it'd make them amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a good move to
bring Greg Theme, or yeah, well, that's how I pronounced it. Sorry if I butchered it. What happened to the coach switching up lines and pairs after losses? Looks like everything will stay the same until we get starters back. Well, I mean, they were coming off of two wins. You know what I mean? They were coming off of a win against Calgary and a win against LA, in which they looked really good.
When they lost against Arizona, he yanked Peary.
Yeah, he did. So there was a change made after that game. There wasn't a change made after the Boston game because, to be honest with you, I thought they played well enough in the Boston game for stretches that they could have won that game.
Yeah.
It was high-end talent for Boston converting and the Golden Knights not necessarily taking advantage of their chances. So I don't know that that's the fairest assessment to make. I would be shocked if anything crazy happens with the lineup tomorrow. But I mean, I can see a change being made here or there. It's not going to be anything substantial because this is what the Golden Knights have available to them.
Yeah. I mean, there's one healthy scratch at forward and it's Brandon Peary, and his role is limited to, you can't just put Brandon Peary, like, for example, if Greg is thinking, Ryan Reeves sucked last night, why is he not out? Well, Brandon Peary doesn't really fit the William Carrier, Tomasz Nosek fourth line role. It's not, like, you can't just make that switch. So Gallant, his hands are kind of tied with what he has right now.
No, I completely agree. I don't think that there's much you can do until you get Alex Tuck back, until you get Nate Schmidt back. That's when you're going to see substantial changes that are going to be meaningful and impact what you see on the ice. Justice, ESPN Las Vegas head of board operations.
That would be Jared Justice from Tyler Bischoff's show.
Justice. I got to tell him not to send in questions. What is your favorite mystical coaching cliche, rank butts? And of course, why should Jake Bischoff be in the lineup Thursday? Why should Jake Bischoff be in the lineup Thursday? Because I don't know that it could be any worse.
It can't be worse.
Exactly. Rank butts. Nope, not going to do that. And what is your favorite mystical coaching cliche? Get pucks deep.
Get pucks deep?
Yep.
I'm going to go with have fun. Because I love that. I love that.
There's only one coach that says that.
I know.
Not any others.
That's why it's my favorite. So Gallant loves, why did you win tonight? Well, we had fun. Why did you lose tonight? We didn't have enough fun. That's because it's not fun to lose. The result is affecting your fun, not the other way around. Your fun level is not affecting the result of the game. The result of the game is affecting your fun level. That's my favorite one.
Get pucks deep for me is always going to be one of those cliches that I just can't. I can't do it. I can't. This is Ted Krampus. How many punches to the noggin could you withstand from Mark Stone? How many could Deontay Wilder? Could Mark Stone beat Thor in a hockey fight? I'm totally fine with you guys spending the entirety of the pod discussing Mark Stone fighting. How many punches could I take to the noggin from Mark Stone? Exactly zero.
Like, well, I could take one.
Half of one would hit me and I'd be down for sure.
I could take one and then I would die. But I would have taken that one. So I'll say one.
Taylor Robb again.
But what was the second question, though? Deontay Wilder?
Yeah, Deontay Wilder.
I think Mark Stone could punch Deontay Wilder for an hour, and it wouldn't hurt him.
Okay. The other question was, could Mark Stone beat Thor in a hockey fight? I'm going to go with yes, just simply because I don't know that Thor can skate.
Yeah, Thor's skating ability is definitely questionable, so we'll go with Stone.
Alex G at VGK 702, what's a forecheck?
Forecheck. I'm going to let you answer this one.
Forechecking is when you are in the offensive zone and you are utilizing your skating and your speed and angles, either as one or two or a unit of three at times, depending on how aggressive your forecheck is, to try to put pressure on the defenseman of the opposition team in their own zone in order to turn the puck over for scoring chances. Forechecking happens in the offensive zone. Forechecking does not lead to breaking the puck out of your own zone.
It's tough to understand sometimes. Everyone listening to this is so confused right now.
Or maybe they didn't know what forechecking was, and now they do.
No, I think they all know. They're just just dumbfounded at why we're breaking it down. But let's go to the next question.
That was thorough, right?
That yeah, was it was. Good. It was good. That was good.
No questions after yeah. this no, about what forechecking is? Okay, good. Great. Who would Sir Stoffington, who would win in a fight? Joe Thornton or Jack Skellington?
I don't even know who that is.
Jack Skellington?
Yeah.
Never seen The Nightmare Before Christmas?
Oh.
It's the skeleton.
Oh, okay. I've never seen that movie, but I am aware of who that character is. It's like the real skinny guy with like the white head.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. My answer, Father Time.
I think Joe Thornton could face wash the cartoon, so I'll go with Joe Thornton.
Let's see. Jammy. Our favorite Jammy. The delightful Mr. Granger mentioned Zykov had the best game of the season.
Of his season. Let's specify. I did not say Zykov had the best game of the season of any player. It was of Zykov's season.
This is such a Jammy tweet, too.
Yeah.
Because he throws immediate shade by calling you delightful, when we all know that's sarcasm. And then takes what you said and twists it a little bit. But however, Zykov had the best game of the season, which is a point I concur with. Could have just said agree.
Jammy never agrees with me.
Could you elaborate? Thank you. Wink. Was it a wink emoji? No, just a smiley face.
This is a monumental moment in my
Jammy
life.
Jammy likes you.
I've never heard Jammy agree with me on Twitter, so I'm happy that he agrees with me on something.
So Zykov was active and noticeable last night.
He possessed the puck. He was really strong on the puck. He possessed it better than he has all season. He made a few really good passes. He wasn't great by any stretch, but he has been invisible for the last three or four games. And last night he was noticeable, like you said. I thought he was pretty good.
Jeff Miller, and this is going to be the last one that we do, would love to hear your thoughts on what VGK can do to get the third line going. It seems like they have no identity or chemistry. Put Peary in, swap Carrier and Zykov for a game. Swap Eakin and Nosek with Glass sliding over to center, ? I think it's all about how they approach the offensive blue line. If they can, Cody Eakin, Valentin Zykov, Cody Glass, or even Brandon Peary, whoever's in the lineup, if they can make a concerted effort to not just dump the puck in, they'll probably get some more scoring chances. There will be some cohesion. They're going to start backing off the defensemen if they present themselves as a threat to actually carrying the puck in and actually creating some scoring chances. They did it at times against Nashville last night, and it led to better zone entries, better scoring chances, and really led to Cody Glass having a really good game, Valentin Zykov being very noticeable, having a good game. They just need to change the way that they attack the offensive blue line. That's the only change I would make.
Yeah, I think Cody Eakin is still a little rusty. He missed, obviously, the first few games of the year, and he's kind of starting to get back into it. It takes anyone time to get back into it, so I'm not surprised that he's been a little rusty. But I also think Eakin is having to change the way he plays, because when Eakin is on the third line with Ryan Carpenter and Tomasz Nosek, he's dumping and chasing all night long. He's not possessing the puck. He's not trying to make offensively skilled plays like he is with Cody Glass and Valentin Zykov and eventually Alex Tuch. I think Eakin is smart enough, and I think he's talented enough to be a center on an offensive line, but he has to have the pieces around him to do that. And for most of his time with the Golden Knights, it's been Tuch is great on one side, and then he's got Carpenter, Lindbergh, Nosek, whoever it is that's not creating offense on the other side. I think you get him with Cody Glass, Zykov, Tuch, offensively minded guys, and I think it's going to get better, not worse. I don't know how long it's going to take. Maybe it takes Tuch coming back in the lineup, but I do think they can adapt and be more offensive.
And the other thing, too, is don't assume that just because Alex Tuch will suit up and be in the lineup that first game, that line's going to go off for 3 or 4 points.
Yeah, it's going to take time.
You need to allow these guys to get some time to get their bearings, as we're seeing, I think, with Cody Eakin. I think Cody Eakin's had maybe 3 or 4 grade A scoring chances that have come off the stick of Cody Glass. And it's just the timing's just not right there yet. It will be. It's going to work. It'll be just fine, because Glass, Eakin, Tuch is better than Glass, Eakin, Zykov, Peary, It just is.
Yeah. And one thing we didn't, like, we talked about it a ton a few podcasts ago, but Cody Glass is going to keep getting better. Remember, he's only played 7 NHL games, and we talked about it. He looks great on the power play because the play is slowed down, and on 5-on-5, it's faster. The game is slowing down. You can literally see it happening by game. The game is slowing down. By the time we get to game 50, he's going to be making plays like he is on the power play at 5-on-5.
Yeah,
he is going to continue to get better.
As bad as the game ended last night, I thought Cody Glass had a heck of a game.
Yeah, he was great. And remember, in preseason, he didn't look all that good.
No, but he's gotten significantly better in these 7 games, for sure. All right, Jesse, what are you working on? Where can people find your stuff?
You can find me at @JesseGranger_ on Twitter, at TheAthletic.com if you want to subscribe. 40% off, $2.99 a month. It is TheAthletic.com/Granger. I'm working on a bunch of stuff. I'm going to be on that trip to Chicago and Pittsburgh, so there'll be plenty of prospect stuff. I'm going to do a really cool story on a couple guys down there, including the guys who have played really well for the first start to the season. Lucas Elvinus is one who the kid – I honestly didn't have that high of expectations for him going into the season. I thought, man, if he can even like he's going to be trying to stay above water in the AHL, yep. And he's been their best player through a few games. He's lighting up the score sheet down there, so it'll be fun to catch up with him and just talk to Rocky Thompson. He's super honest about which players are standing out, which ones are playing well, so you'll get a good update from there.
All right. I am Ryan the Hockey Guy. It's at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter, on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show Monday through Friday on Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. every single weekday, Monday through Friday, as well as the Vegas Golden Knights pregame intermission and postgame reports for every single Vegas Golden Knights game. That is where you can find me. I tweet a lot, try to make jokes sometimes. Sometimes they don't land. Most of the times they do. Anyway, we will be back with you next week. Jesse will be racking up the frequent flyer miles, but we'll be sure to get an episode in from Jesse Granger's first road trip of the season. Is it?
Well, I went to San Jose, but that was only one game.
That's not a road trip.
Multiple games for it to be a trip.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So we will be back with you next week. Thank you for listening. And again, like, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating. Even if you just leave, suck it, Granger. All we ask. We don't need anything fancy.
Everything helps.
Thanks, guys.
Right.
Lemongrass aroma therapy and body mist.